Hi, ladies and gents. Welcome to another edition of Northern Transmissions. Thanks, as always, for giving a listen. This week's episode, I had the opportunity to sit down with Jacob and Jonathan from the Drums just before their show at the venue in Vancouver, BC. The track Money off the Drums' new release Portamento off the French Kiss label. We first discussed a little bit about the mood around the recording of the new album.
Well, I think our reality has become darker in a way. You know, the first year and a half of this band's existence, really, I feel like our feet never really touched the ground. You know, we played a couple shows in New York, and you know, a few months later, we were touring the world, and, you know, everything was so surreal, and, you know, a lot of people putting labels on us, and it just seemed like everything was spinning so fast. Things started to settle down, and, you know, we just realized, like, wow, you know, some things got away from us, and so we had to rein things back in and really figure out who we were as a band. And we lost a band member in all of that mayhem, and, you know, there's just, like, good things and some bad things that happened, and we found ourselves in, you know, in a very real place. You know, our feet finally touched the ground and the dust settled, and we're so grateful for that, because it really allowed us to make an album where we can say how we feel, because I think before that we didn't really know how we felt.
I was gonna ask you about this song, Book of Revelations. It's kind of it's a romantic song, but like fatalistic at the same type. I mean, it's a little. Yeah. What was the behind that song?
It was just, you know, a realization that I had come to while I was making Portamento. Something I'd always kind of been very conflicted about. You know, when you grow up, how I did. There's certain things that are just stuffed down your throat your whole life. And so finally I was just kind of able to rid myself of all of that, any sort of, like, you know, fire and brimstone teachings and all that kind of stuff. You know, I could sit there and say, you know, oh, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in heaven or hell, but there was always this sort of, like, small little flame in the back of my mind, just kind of wondering what, you know, on my deathbed, how am I actually going to feel? So, you know, this was a pretty liberating year for me, an exciting one, because I've kind of closed the door 100% on any sort of pondering. And so, you know, for a while it was really great and liberating because it was exotic, but then there is the inevitable backlash where you're like, well, now what? So, you know, when you're not living for something in the future, really, you're just sort of, you have to kind of make do with what you have now. So, you know, and I think that's why people believe in that stuff in the first place. It's just a comforting device, you know, because the reality is quite grim, I think. But, yeah, so, we were just going to make an honest album. And so we thought, you know, I just thought, well, why cheat the album on that sort of subject matter? Because that is something that I was going through in a pretty big way.
Son of an evil man, I know you hate yourself.
Thanks very much for listening to the show, Northern Transmissions. I hope you're enjoying my interview with the drums featuring Jacob and Jonathan. That was the song which we previously discussed, Book of Revelation, off the 2011 Portamento record. If you want any more information about the band and their upcoming tour dates, you can go on to their MySpace or their website, www.thedrums.com. We talked a little bit as well about the band's sound, which kind of features a little mix of the Factory Records meets 50s pop, as well as self-producing their own records and having the chance to play with their hero, Edwin Collins, on his record.
Jacob and I both really, when we met each other, we were just boys. We were both, our favorite band in the world was this band called Joy Electric, this really obscure synth-pop outfit from Orange County, California. And I was the only person I knew in existence that cared about that band. And when I met Jacob, he, at the time, thought he was the only person. So we latched onto each other, and it was, you know, the music that that band was making was just these beautiful, super melodic, very sad sounding, you know, three and a half minute pop songs. I remember just kind of thinking, this is like the type of music I would want to make if I made music, and I think that always just kind of stuck with me. And so, you know, I would just find things that, you know, when you're a kid and you fall in love with the band, anything they say becomes the gospel, you know. So he would always have liner notes in his albums, and he was very outspoken about music and pop music, and he was obsessed with pop music. And, you know, so, I mean, that's how I discovered bands like Orange Juice, and then, you know, further, deeper down to that is The Wake, and you know, The Wake really became a huge influence on us and is one of the bands that made us want to actually start the drums. When I moved from Florida moved from Brooklyn to Florida to stay with Jacob and record, because he was living there, I just kind of like, we really got into the Shangri-Las, the Ronettes, and all those like girl groups from the 60s. And, you know, I guess essentially they're kind of doing the same thing. They're writing these really melodic, straightforward sort of pop songs. And we didn't really want to choose between those genres, you know. And so we just sort of, I think, took what we could from each of those, from that sort of that UK indie underground scene, and also that pretty commercial American pop music from the 60s, you know, and just kind of, you know, I think we sort of fetishized both of those sounds, and so we were torn on what to do, so we just kind of kept both of them and came up with something for ourselves.
Take a run down to the beach. Oh. you guys ever think about working with like an outside producer? Because I know you do most of the, I think you do all the production, engineering, even the photography by yourselves on the artwork.
Normally, yeah. Yeah, we've done all our own production, all our own mixing and engineering, whatever that all means. I think we just kind of record something until we think it sounds good, and then we just give it to the label and say, this is it, put it out. And we've been lucky enough to do that so far. I don't know what the future holds. We talk about producers here and there. We talk about engineers, you know, but I just feel like, you know, we just came out with our second album, and we don't really know where we'll be. You know, we've always declared that bands don't need producers, and
in modern times especially.
We're also, you know, we've realized we've broken some of our own rules.
We've made huge declarations and just thrown them out the window.
Just bulldozed right over them.
Okay.
Yes, but I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But you know, I could see us. It's one of those things where I feel like we've sort of, I say this in an affectionate, positive way, but for lack of a better term, dug our own grave, you know? Like, I don't think we could suddenly have, you know, Flood produce our next album, you know what I mean? I think that would kind of, I mean, I feel like we might as well get a different band name, you know, and switch up members and all that.
Yeah, the idea of getting a producer isn't... There's nothing that really appeals to it to me, because I love just staying up all night tinkering on sounds and music and stuff, and that just be some guy coming in and taking away the things I like to do, you know? We like to do.
It makes a lot of sense, actually. I mean, you guys love the process, I think, and you know, you have confidence in your art that it's like, yeah, why, yeah.
Well, I mean, we've also said that we... You know, there's definitely things we don't know about. There's certain limitations. We didn't go to school for recording or production or anything like that. And we think that, like, those limitations, whatever they are, make up our sound, too. You know, like, if we were capable of just sounding like anything and we did all the time, you wouldn't just be able to turn it on and say, oh, that's the drums, which is something that we like, you know. Being yourself. Just like you're always told to be.
I think you guys both worked on the Edwin Collins' last album, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been a pretty cool experience. I mean, cause you're both, and I hate to say it again, like I'm an old man. I said you guys were younger earlier or whatever, but it's pretty cool.
You can say that as much as you want, honestly. I don't mind at all.
But it must have been pretty, was it an exciting, was it a cool experience for you guys?
Yeah, it was really cool. It was one of the few or only times we've ever really collaborated with anyone on anything, and it sounds ridiculous to say, but it actually was really inspiring to work with him and kind of get to know him and stuff, just because he's been through so much. You know, he had a stroke a few years ago and everything. Yeah. He actually can't play the guitar anymore. Yeah, that's kind of why we did a song with him on Us album. He had Us and do a song with him. Johnny Marr did a song with him. Roddy Frame from Aztec Camera, and I think Franz Ferdinand. But he's still so, you know, and he can't even really speak in complete full sentences, you know. But he's so there, you know, and he's got such like a sense of humor still. Like he's so like with it, and it's inspiring to see somebody like kind of get hit that hard and then just be like, I want to, you know, make a great record again, and like get in the studio, spend every day in the studio like that, and really, you know. And he you know, he's not lazy. We didn't go in and do everything either, you know, for him. It was a very collaborative, you know, so it was really, really cool.
And it was the studios where he did all that Orange Juice stuff and his solo records as well. So it's really cool walking in and seeing Johnny Marr's guitar there, and then you know, going to the back and he's like letting us hold those the original reel-to-reel masters of Rip It Up and all this stuff, and it's just kind of like, how, you know, that was in the first, that was within a year of us playing our first show. So it was kind of just like, how in the world is this happening, you know? And to be able to write and also sing with him on an album, you know, we rewind like a year before that, and we were just, Jacob and I on YouTube, just like watching all those videos and really becoming really quite obsessed with Orange Juice and all that.
Concludes our show. Before we leave you with one more question to the guys in the drums, who I thank very much, Jacob and Jonathan. We talked about the quick success and the adulation of the media of the band. Yeah, so thanks to those guys, and thank you very much to my producer and engineer and multi-talented fellow, Spencer Carson. And I'm Charles Brownstein, as always. And please check us out at www.northerntransmissions.com or Northern Transit Twitter. Or you can Gmail the show and tell us how much you hate us or love us at northerntransmissions@gmail.com. Thank you.
I started making music, and there was a bit of a buzz created. And like you said, you just found yourself like, you know, I was doing a bit of research for the interview. I was just looking at all the like amazing reviews from, you know, all the influential press stuff, some really, really nice reviews, and deservedly so. I mean, the first record is really, really good, and I mean, does it? You ever think to yourself, wow, man, we started out, I think, in your bedroom.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's hard for us to. I think we're getting more and more used to it, but definitely at the beginning, and then up until probably about a year ago, it's rough because people, after our first record came out and before Portamento came out, the question everyone was asking us was like, do you think you can live up to the hype? You know, do you think you can deliver whatever everyone's expecting from you or whatever? And it was just, our answer was always the same, and it was just like, well, we're not really interested in living up to anyone else's expectations for what, you know, we have a very specific idea of what we want to do, and that's all we're going to do. So if anyone expects like any more or less from us, they're going to be disappointed, and that's their problem, you know? So it constantly felt like we were getting that from everyone, you know, not even just the press, but even like almost like people we work with and stuff like that, you know? And it almost came to the point where we just had to say, look, this is what we're doing, and that's all we're doing, you know? Like, so I don't know. It was an interesting time, but it's good to know that we're finally kind of at the point where I think we're able to look at the whole thing as just kind of like, this is what we do. It's our job. We love doing it, but we're kind of like a working class band that just puts out records, you know? And I think because we're finally able to get into that mentality, I think others kind of view us that way too. Which is great, you know. We never really wanted to be anything, but we definitely didn't want to be like a flash in the pan or anything like that. You know, we didn't want to do anything that was trendy. We didn't want people to look at our first record and say, "Oh, that was a flavor of the month," and that band disappeared and never did anything again. You know, we'd much rather be a band like the Ramones that have this annoyingly repetitive idea and just keep doing it album after album. You know, it's nice to feel like you're finally getting into that groove rather than the flavor of the month type of thing.